Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Can I suggest you shut up and show more football?
Come on, come on. Figure. We've done that then. Can we not knock it?
I am flabbergasted. I wouldn't even let them on the bus after the match. I get a taxi back to Manchester.
Again, please don't call me arrogant, because what I'm saying is true. I think I'm a special one.
When the seagulls follow the troll, it's because they think sardines will be thrown into the sea. Thank you.
Understand what I'm trying to get at. Yes, he was a great player. Yes, he was a wonderful leader. But he wasn't a magician.
Take him out, son. I mean that. Take him.
Well, here we go again. And for me, a top-class competition so far.
Yes.
I've really enjoyed it, Andy. I think teams would appear to want to play rather than sit.
Rather than have a keep ball session.
A pass fest between two centre-backs, yes. It's been really good. I think the refereeing has been top class. And I, rather than VAR be used as a tool to beat up the referee with and control,
yes,
which happens in the Premier League, I think it's been used as something that can help the match day officials. Decision-making has been quick. It's not been intrusive. And there's a message there for Mike Riley. This is how you can use the technology in a way that brings even people like me on board.
And me.
That doesn't like that.
But the beauty has been, Richard, we haven't sat every game thinking, right, when's it coming in now? What's it going to decide now? No, it's been used 90% of the time when I've seen it. And I've always said offside, fine. If we want to go down that route, that's fine. I'm happy to do that. That's great. That one's never bothered me. It's the others, the intrusion of everything else.
It has bothered you because we get it wrong so often.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's better, much better. And the way they've used it, it should be a lesson to Mike Riley and his subordinates that this is the way forward. We're stuck with it. We're going to use it, then use it properly.
Yes. The tournament, of course, has not been without drama. And it would only be right and proper for us both to take this opportunity on the podcast that we have, obviously, on beIN Sports and with a variety of different people, Andy, that have joined us in studios at different times to wish Christian Eriksen a very speedy recovery. They were dreadful scenes. And again, congratulations to everybody involved that quite literally brought him back.
Yeah, saved his life.
Which they did.
Yeah.
It's always nice to welcome new listeners. We had a huge influx over this last week. As I mentioned last week, Andy, we're now part of the Acast network.
Okay.
As a result of...
instead of beIN cast...
Yes, we know the A-cast, not the B-cast.
Instead of B-cast.
It means a whole lot of people have found us for the first time. And now you have. You're very welcome. But do go back and take a listen to past episodes. And I promise you, you'll find some extraordinary stories and tales there. If you have found us for the first time, subscribe and follow us on whatever platform you get your pods on. Leave a nice review and rate us, please. Five stars.
But you say leave a nice review. Do you want a nice review or do you just want an honest review?
Well, I think an honest review would be review.
Yeah. Oh, well, okay. Very good.
You can follow us on Insta and Twitter at Keys and Grey Pod, A-N-D, Keys and Grey Pod. So wherever you are in Europe, welcome.
Yep.
I always, Andy, at this point, like to offer you a number of clues to where our biggest
test my geography.
Spike in listeners was last week. Yes.
Right.
I am home to the Sofia Cathedral, one of two UNESCO sites.
Oh, Sofia's, where's Sofia?
No. You're wrong. You'll find the National Botanical Gardens in this city. My football team plays Glasgow. At the Olympic Stadium.
Oh, it's either...
We've been there at different times.
Well, it's either Rome or in Germany. What's the Olympic Stadium? Munich, Berlin.
Yep. Go on, keep going. Wrong.
My geography's going this week.
We're in Kiev in the Ukraine.
Ah,
and welcome to all our listeners in the Ukraine. It's very nice to have your company.
It was tough, that. It was like a...
That wasn't easy. In fairness. No, that wasn't easy.
There was an eclectic bunch of clues there that didn't quite all fit together.
Correct. So, a number of matters this week to turn our attention to.
I'd just like to say, I'm glad we've recorded this when we're recording it.
Why?
Well...
Ahead of Scotland,
I'm a little concerned.
I can't deny
I'm a little concerned, fella.
Well, we're speaking Friday morning, so nothing we say now will either be relevant by the time most listen to this or necessary. Andy.
So when you listen to this, congratulations to Scotland on a momentous victory.
No, I'd rather talk and express and explain some of the things I said on Be In Sports earlier this week about the prospective appointment of Rafa Benitez to Everton. I cannot think of a greater betrayal by the owners of a football club if Farhad Moshiri were to go down
that line.
You think
it's that bad?
I like to believe, maybe incorrectly and maybe naively, that suggestion was put into the public domain. In many ways, the government do it all the time.
Yeah.
They beat us up and get us ready
Stick
for an announcement. So
Stick
by the time the announcement
water.
Comes, you're not surprised. I like to think that Moshiri thought, well, let's just test the temperature of the water. He will have found out it's red hot.
Yeah.
Rafa Benitez, look, I've never hidden the fact that I think he has been the most selfish individual ever to work in the Premier League. Everything is about Benitez. Yeah. Nothing is about the club or the players or the collective. It's always, always about him. Mm. Everywhere he's been, that is the case. It was at Newcastle, which is why he constantly fell out with Mike Ashley and left a legacy suggesting no one could follow him at that football club. Well, Steve Bruce has.
Yes, and very well.
And he's done as well as and better in two seasons.
Yeah.
Now, would Howard Kendall ever have considered managing Liverpool?
No.
Would Joe Royal?
No. No chance.
Harry Kattrick?
No. Would Shanks ever thought of managing?
No. Even? There are. I get it that in a modern world we need to be more flexible, and that the loyalty that you and I believe exists in many different places perhaps doesn't anymore. But there are still some things that can't be done. Benitez is anti-Everton. He flies in the face of everything that football club is about, in my view.
Yeah.
The collective, the community, the people's club. And Andy, he is adored on the other side of Stanley Park.
That's fine. Now, let him be so. Let him be adored there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, were he to get it, the first derby, he loses by sitting in two banks of four. Liverpool sweep Everton off the pitch. Come back, Agent Benitez. Your work is done.
No,
it will never end.
I can imagine all those.
I mean, there are so many alternatives. I'm not a Johnny come lately with Roberto Mancini. I've said for a long time the Premier League misses him. Ask Roberto what he's doing at the end of the Euros. Mm-hmm. Sean Dyche, I know people laugh when I mention that name. I don't know why. Nobody trades better.
Mm-hmm.
What a record he's got in the Premier League. Duncan Ferguson, who, I mean, there's somebody here in the Mirror comments this morning. I'd rather see Duncan managers in the Championship than I would Rafa in the Premier League.
That's the feeling.
But Duncan, and if you think, well, maybe he needs help, have Roy Hodgson consult. Something of that nature.
But don't you see?
I know he's been to Liverpool, but that's not the same. Someone with... with an understanding of people. Benitez hasn't got that.
And I've said to you before about Benitez, if it had been 10 years ago, then maybe you would understand some, and I say some Evertonians might think, oh, this boy's in the top of his game here. He's at the top of his trade.
Yeah.
You know, he might be able to help us if that's the case. But he's not. It's 10 years down the line. And Rafa's effect on football teams has diminished over the years and what he can achieve there. Plus the fact, I sometimes, you know what I'm like, I don't like to be overcritical at times, but I really felt strongly about this. And so I did consult a lot of my mates, you know, from Everton's most successful side ever, because I thought their opinion will be important to me and whether I am shaping the right opinion. And to a player, 100% feel exactly the same as me. I haven't spoken to everybody, but everyone I've spoken to has agreed with me. They do not want to see Rafael Benitez as manager of Everton Football Club. Full stop. Now, I think there'll be one or two supporters that do, but I am I'm sure, Richard, that the vast majority of Evertonians do not want Rafael Benitez as coach at Everton Football
One Club. Popular fan's website put it bluntly by stating, if this happens, we'd be beyond hashtag Rafa out. It would be hashtag Moshiri out.
Yeah. Well, I hope he's dipped his toe in the water, felt the, as you say, the temperature of boiling point, and quickly withdrew his toe. And any kind of offer that might be forthcoming for Benitez is quickly withdrawn.
A little bit, if we'd had a conversation about England, Scotland, a little bit like that. This conversation could be out of date by the time this podcast goes to air. But the thoughts are now on record, and it would just be wrong. If you want a young manager, Eddie Howe sitting on his backside, I know that probably wouldn't appeal to everybody, but at least Eddie's got an idea.
Eddie Howe's a better shout than Rafa Benitez.
Of course he is.
I've heard Graham Potter's name mentioned. Graham Potter's a better shout than Rafa Benitez. I'm telling you now. I've said to you, if they want time, and listen, I get that Ancelotti left him in the lurch, and that came as a huge surprise, and what do? You're looking for a manager for a great club, and you don't think you need one. And then all of a sudden, within 24 hours, you're searching. So if they need some time, then Duncan's there. You know, say to Duncan, put him in charge and say, listen, I want you to go on with the job. Mm. You have full backing. I'm not going to lie to you. We will be looking around. If we feel a suitable, experienced coach comes out, we may well look to him. But go and do it. And if you get the job done, and if you're doing it well, who's to say we need a new coach? Mm. Now, that would have been a much better option to me than going down the Rafa Benitez route. I'm sorry, I just don't get it. I don't get it. I really don't.
Speaking to the Spanish press this week, Sergio Ramos said the offer, which was acceptable, had a sell-by date on it. So they informed us a week ago that the option had run out. So I kind of what happened. No one told me. Do you think we take that seriously, Sergio?
Ridiculous.
I would have stayed, but the offer's run out.
That's nonsense.
All Señor Pérez has to do is to say, see that offer we made? It's back on the table.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you mean, how stupid do they think we are? Honestly. It's Friday morning. This story will quickly develop. And again, we may be a pace behind it. But UEFA threatening to pull the Euros out of London, the semis and the final, because they've got 2,500 designated VIPs that they want to attend these games. Mm-hmm. They will not probably be vaccinated. They certainly are not going to enter a lockdown scenario. And they're saying that unless the British government is more flexible on this, we're going to take the finals and the semis to Hungary, where we will play in front of full stadiums. Don't know if that's the reason they're saying it, that they want now more people to attend or not.
But if
the British government capitulate on this, why didn't they for the Champions League final?
Well, why didn't they when I went back 4 weeks ago? I fully vaccinated, negative test, and I had to sit in a hotel for 11 days at my own expense. Come off it.
I know.
And you and I are sitting here now, and if the Euro's finished and we want to go back to the UK to see our family and see our friends in 3 weeks' time or 2.5 weeks' time, even though we've both been fully vaccinated, negative tests, we can't even get into the bloody country.
You're absolutely right.
And yet they're letting 2,500. I'll tell you what I'd do anyway. I would take it away from Wembley and play the semi-finals and final. Did you see that atmosphere in Hungary the other night in Budapest?
Oh, fabulous.
It was magnificent, Richard. Yeah.
And that's why I'm wondering.
Why wouldn't you put it there?
Well, I'm wondering whether this has become an issue because they would quite like to do that.
Well, why wouldn't you? It's a no-brainer.
Yeah. So we're going to be talking today about individuals who are in some ways more important to football these days than the superstars. These guys are in their own profession. I would add that very quickly.
Fans?
No. Paul Burgess. Here's a name. Paul Burgess. Poached from Arsenal.
Oh.
Poached from Arsenal by Real Madrid. His career started at Blackpool.
Okay.
Highest profile acquisition so far, Jonathan Calderwood, who joined Paris Saint-Germain from Aston Villa.
Ah, got you.
In 2013.
We've met him.
Yes.
You and I have met him.
A man described by Gerard Houllier as the world's best.
Yeah.
These boys are quietly making a name for themselves. They don't necessarily want to be identified.
No.
Some have, and two names I've just given you.
Yeah.
These guys are sports turf experts.
Yeah. The old-fashioned word would have been groundsman. Well, it would have been, wouldn't it?
Yes. An updated version of that would be Grounds Person.
Grounds Person, sorry.
But yes, these guys are the engineers that go to delivering the beautiful pitches that our boys play on. That, you know, I mean, in some ways, Andy, this is so obvious. And yet in others, we've really not considered it. Calderwood, for instance, when arriving in Paris, which is where we met him recently, he said to me that the Parisians had an injury list the length of your arm, he says. A more stable pitch would start to solve that problem. But there was a more tactical reason for signing Calderwood, says the author of this article who we're about to speak to. Before his arrival, the pitch was slow, wobbly, unpredictable for the kind of high-tempo passing game played by most of Europe's elite teams. The owners realised that it wasn't about buying 11 world-class players, says Calderwood. They needed things behind them to allow them to work. One of the main things, of course, was the pitch.
Absolutely.
I mean, it makes sense, doesn't it?
Total sense.
But the science that goes into it is both baffling and fascinating. And although this may sound a dry subject, trust me, stay with us now because we're going to introduce you to our guest who's... a number of things about this. The long read, it's entitled. It's in The Guardian on a regular basis. 5,000 words made available to the journalist who is contributing to the long read. That, in newspaper terms, is a massive number of words.
That's a book to me.
Yes, in some ways it is. So research required. You need to know what you're talking about. And I don't on this subject, but our guest this week does. So our guest is the Guardian writer, William Ralston, who, when I read this piece this week, Andy, I actually read it twice.
Right.
You say 5,000 words is a book. I read it twice, so I read 10,000 words. Because the first time, I just thought, wow. Read it a second time and started to try to absorb it. But there's so much there. William, how are you?
I'm very good, thank you very much. Enjoying the reaction to the article. Obviously, it was a lot of work. It was in the pipeline for about 2 years.
Was it really?
So yeah.
Did you expect it? Carry on.
I had the idea a while ago to write it. I actually had the idea with David, who's the editor of the long read over at The Guardian. He's absolutely fantastic. A lot of credit must go to him. He was absolutely wonderful in editing this article. But we had the idea about just before the Euros last year. I read a small news article about Jonathan Calderwood, who is obviously at the start of the piece. And you know, I thought, isn't that interesting that the Brits are so fantastic at something? And I love the idea of there being this transfer market between groundsmen, this often overlooked part of the...
So
part
did
of the,
I.
You know.
So did
I dug deeply into it, and he's been covered so... He is, for lack of a better word, a real celebrity in France. I mean, on the day that we spoke, he told me that he was late to the conversation, I think, because... He'd just been stopped for a. He'd just been stopped at the petrol station filling up his car by somebody asking him for a photo. And I was thinking, this is absolutely bizarre. You know, you just don't imagine these people being celebrities, and he was. And so I started, you know, digging deep into it, and then I spoke to UEFA, who were again fantastic for the article. I mean, they don't really grant very much access to journalists, but the guys over there were very supportive of this, and they started to tell me all about how this consultancy thing works and groundsmen and all this sort of thing. And then one of the key things, the key turning point in the article and working out that we wanted to do it was finding out that UEFA had assigned 12 pitch consultants to each of the pitches for the Euros. And every single one of them was they're all English, I think, apart from one, Richard Hayden, who is Irish. And I was just like, it's a very clear exhibition of Britain's excellence in this.
Well,
pardon the pun.
I you talk about the reaction. Let me help you there. The Times regurgitated the article with a credit, in fairness, to The Guardian.
Good.
The Daily Mirror, two days later, followed up and didn't. So we need to admonish them. I mean, everybody really has. Now, you talk about the English grounds management sector. Your article, William, says it's valued at more than $1 billion and employs 27,000 people with specialists in every area, from seed enthusiasts who breed grasses that grow in various different shades. I mean, how scientific actually does it get?
I mean, it's phenomenally scientific. I mean, one of the great experiences writing the article was, I mean, I knew it was scientific because I'd done my research before I started looking into it. But I mean, I started piecing it together. David Maddis at The Guardian gave me the green light to go and research it, obviously a year later because the Euros were cancelled. Because we wanted to land before the Euros, obviously. And then I went, one of the first trips I did, I went to Anfield to go and see the head grounds in there. And they obviously relayed their pitch before the 2017-18 season. And, you know, after that, they won, like, I think they won 46 of their 51 exhibitions. And so that's crazy, the fact that it has such a big upturn in results because Jurgen Klopp's complaining that the pitch was too slow.
Yeah.
And I thought, this is having really real impact. And then, anyway, I went up to the SGRI, which is the Sports Research Institute, which is this, it's on a sort of hill in the middle of North Yorkshire. And I didn't know what to expect. These articles you spend months trying, it's like an iceberg, you spend months just absorbing this knowledge and then you have to sort of whittle it down to 5,000 words. It was originally 10.
Whittle it down to 5,000 words. About a year to write 5,000
words. Honestly, there can't be another journalist other than those signed to the long read that has 5,000 words, William. I mean, come on. That Andy said earlier, that's a book.
It's not a book. I mean, long-form journalism is not. It's a field of journalism that's very rich in the United States. It's not very common over here. And the Guardian long read is one of the few places that does it really well. I mean, I went to the Sports Turf Research Institute and I did three interviews. One of which was the head of consultancy. Then I spoke to one of the consultants who was working with UEFA on, I think, the Copenhagen Stadium. And then the third guy I spoke to was a person called Dr. Christian Spring. Firstly, he's a doctor in turf, which is, I was fascinated to begin with.
Yeah.
But he took me on a tour, and he took me to his laboratory, and one of the things he was testing was the infiltration rates of sand. So, I mean, that sounds quite boring to the majority of us, but it's literally adding water to sand and then working out timing how quickly it passed through the sand, because one of the things that's really changed in pitches between the 70s and 80s and the baseball ground at Derby, and then, you know, you had QPR,
I remember it well, the baseball ground.
Yeah, it was that they didn't drain very well. And there was a famous incident in 1971, I think it was when City were playing Derby, and then the penalty spot disappeared, and the goalkeeper had to walk out and paint the spot.
Yes, that is true. But also, you're too young, William. Clough used to put water on that pitch on purpose. He did. In this series of podcasts, we've spoken to Tony Pulis, who talked about the preparation of pitches when he was a manager, and he said, we used to grow the grass long to suit us, because when we went to Manchester, Liverpool and Tottenham and Arsenal, they prepared a pitch to suit them. Now, we've laughed at people like Arsene Wenger in the last decade saying, it should all be cut to the same length. But actually, it is, other than a pitch in Manchester, I read, where Pep Guardiola wanted his to be at 19 millimetre in line with ultra-fast pitches, but at Barca and Bayern Munich, but was told, no, it's got to be 23. This is 4 millimetres. It's got to be 23 because the cold climate in Manchester means it can't recover. Yeah. 4 millimetres.
Yeah. I actually heard it was shorter than that. I mean, one source told me, who's inside at City, told me that it was actually 17, but I don't know. I couldn't fact check it.
This is a millimetre between friends.
This is surreal.
Guardiola is the attacking football, you know, it's phenomenal.
One source told me, there are loads of
stories. One of the things that we missed in the article was we couldn't put it in because it stymied the flow too much. It was essentially talking about how they did prepare the pitches in the olden days. Like, there was a story of Andy Gray at Lambton, basically, who he's head of groundsmanship at St George's Park, so he's playing pitches for England at the moment. And he told me that when he's at Southampton was a very rich club for this. There was a guy, Dave Roberts, who's now at Liverpool. He then had two assistants, Carl Stanley, who's now at Wembley, and then there's Andy Gray, who's now at St George's Park. So that was a very rich lineage, let's say. But anyway, he told me how Gordon Strachan came. He was a manager at the time, and he insisted on cutting the pitch, leading it at like a bush, I think he was the word he said, to make sure to stop United and Ferguson coming in and steamrolling them. And it was the only time that they weren't 1-0, and I think Ferguson complained about it. So they did do that. Nowadays they can't. The pitches are quite heavily standardised. And ultimately, is that we're at a funny little pivot now where ultimately the pitches have become so good now, and actually they are struggling now to to make them much better. I mean, they're like snooker tables, you know, nowadays.
I mean, they literally. I mean, let's start one or two of these fascinating descriptions. What are micromoles?
That's the level of light in effect in the stadium. The Wembley is essentially very, very dark. I'm sure you guys have broken in there. Even when I went in there before the FA Cup final 3 days before, and it was dark. I mean, it's impossible to get the lights to grow. And so they have one of the great things that one of the Arsenal groundsmen did was that they essentially you're tricking the seed into thinking it's summer. So you'll bring in lights to put over the pitch to basically to encourage. And they're one of the reasons the pitches have become so bad now is that chairmen of clubs can't afford them. They run, I can't remember how much it is now, but one of the statistics I heard is it's like $2,500 a week or something. It's a lot of money. So the lower league clubs can't afford to do this a lot of the time because of no ticket revenue. So one of the reasons that the clubs are struggling, they have struggled this season, was because they cut corners on the electricity.
But you've also got
in Wembley,
William. In your article, you also talk about these giant wind machines. So you've got light. You're replicating wind.
Wind machine.
You're creating the circumstances in which grass wants to grow.
I've seen this. I've seen the light machines, but I've never seen the wind machines.
Nor me. But apparently, these are now quite common at the top end.
Yeah, one of the funny things about it was when I was recording, I went to Wembley and did the interview. I followed Dale Frith, who was absolutely wonderful for the article again. He's the Wembley consultant who's working with Carl Stanley, who was a former head groundsman at Fleetwood Town, I think it was. Absolutely great personality, extremely good at what he does. Studied at Myersco, which is one of the great schools in turf care. I think people come from abroad to study at it because it's like the Silicon Valley of turf. And one of the things I was interviewing him was that at the same time I was interviewing him, I'd walk over the pitch and he had these fixed fans growing over. So every single like 10 meters you walked, you just got blown in the face, and it was awful. It was really difficult. But yeah, they all do that. And I went to West Ham to go and spend the day at the Olympic, the London Stadium. With Anthony Stones, who was the former head groundsman at Stade France, and he's now working there. And yeah, they have them everywhere because you have to remember that like preparing a pitch at like St George's Park, where there's no stadium, is very, very different to preparing it at Wembley, where you've essentially got you're essentially in a microclimate. And the stadiums have got bigger. The groundsman's jobs have actually got harder because they are essentially fabricating the environment the grass needs to grow. So. That's a really, so they have to come up with these artificial techniques, essentially, one of which is the light, one of which is the wind too. So yeah, they are fabricating everything.
Let me quote
the whole, process.
William, you wrote this, so you'll know, but let me quote this back to you and enlighten others. I just want to read this whole paragraph. Surface hardness should be between 70 and 90 gravities. A measurement of how quickly a hammer decelerates on impact. If it's too soft, players will tire too quickly. If it's too hard, the risk of injury increases and the ball will bounce too high. The grass, which should be between 24 mil and 28, must be cut in straight lines across the pitch, perpendicular to the touchline. Even the dimensions of the penalty spot and the centre circle are specified, 200 mil and 240 millimetres in diameter, respectively.
Wow.
And his face is a
Does that mean the groundsmen can't cut the grass any way they like then? Make all these fancy patterns on it?
No, that got outlawed by the Premier League last year. UEFA, his body, FIFA, UEFA, and whoever it is, and that might be different in the Bundesliga, it might be different in Spain, but the Premier League outlaws that and how they. I think they outlawed it last year because I think John Ledwidge at City, Leicester, who's one of these new breed scientific was basically cutting it in really funny patterns in the Premier League banned it because grass has two sides, a dark side and a light side. And essentially, the way you cut it, you can essentially change the way it looks. And they were doing all these funny patterns. It looked great, but UEFA insists on it being cut that way. So if you look at all the pictures for the Euros now, is that they all have... they all have the same pattern on them. It's just about standardisation, making it look presentable on television.
Grass has two sides. I thought a line was left by the mower.
Mower, yeah.
But you're saying grass actually has two colours.
It's the way that the grass is leaning down. I can't remember the exact science behind it, but grass has two sides. So essentially, which way you cut it will either be a light green or a dark green, and that's the way that they present. That got cut from the article.
William, how do you measure gravities?
Yeah,
That's called a Clegg hammer. So basically, I mean, it's this very funny set of equipment. Some of it looks really scientific, like really from the future. I think the line I used was like a torture to the future. It looks quite scary, intimidating. And then some of them, like to measure the infiltration rate, for example, is like a bean can without the ends cut off, and you'll essentially just put it on the ground, fill it with water, and measure how long that water takes to disappear. But it's
mind blowing, but it's mind blowing, but it's critically important as well. And when you talk about a transfer market, William, it's not just a transfer market. Some of them operate like MI5. They don't want to talk to you, do they? They don't want you to know what they're doing.
The secrets.
But they are very one of the problems with this piece, as Dave might have told you, is that it acts not very easy. I mean, some of them wanted to talk, but some of them really did not want to talk at all. And it took me a long time to sort of have them warm up to me to be able to show the actual, I mean, firstly, like the science behind it. Some of them are very willing to show you the science behind it, and it's very scientific, it's very technical, and some of them are very, very, you know, some of them are great in one thing and not great in another, and they all have their different attributes, for example, which again, yeah, got cut. Like some of the consultants, for example, are degree trained. In agronomy, so they're fully trained, degree trained agronomists. So they've gone to university and they've studied plant science and life science. Amazing. Or whatever it may be. And some of them are, for example, they'll have been a groundsman and then they'll have moved into consultancy. In which case they'll be better trained in manual labour, but they haven't got the same scientific education other than an NDQ, for example.
Of course.
And there's this snobbery from the people who are very scientifically trained. Who have become, you know, against these people who are becoming consultants when they haven't actually got the same degree of education. So there's like a polluting of the consultancy, the consultancy sphere. Because consultancy and ground are two very, very different jobs. I mean, they are interlinked and, you know, because they are both preparing turf, but a groundsman is essentially, you know, working on one site. One of the great things I said in the piece was that you have Dale Frith, who's this guy from Blackpool, who's working on Wembley, and you know he was working at the FA Cup final, and he's really, you know, for the, you know, obviously work on the Wembley, on the Euros final too. And in the middle of our time together, his work on a school in St Helens whose pitch wasn't draining correctly. And you're thinking that the level of the scope of your job, that nothing is below them, so to speak. You know, it's fascinating to think that they are doing such a range of jobs.
So who is, if we've got Ronaldo and Messi have dominated over the last decade on the pitch, who is the world's best? Who's the one that everybody wants to go and get?
Jonathan Calderwood at PSG is the one that definitely is the peak of it, I would say. I mean, he's done an amazing job at Paris Saint-Germain. The gentleman at Paul Burgess, who was at Real Madrid, became a director of groundsman. I don't know what his title was now, but he went to Real Madrid and was infamously good too. But I mean, Steve Paddock, the guy I mentioned in the piece, was the pivotal turning point in this whole revolution, let's say. I mean, when pitches were, when you had the baseball ground, you know, in those eras, Steve Braddock got the job at Arsenal. George Graham gave him the job at Arsenal. And he got the job by accident. That's the funniest thing about it. He just got cut again. He didn't mean to get the job. The guy, Steve Braddock, who is an absolutely wonderful chap, and I can't talk more highly about him. He's extremely, extremely dedicated to what he does. He was working in a field, apparently, or working at the Veterinary College in London. That's right. He got the job through his mother because he had failed an aptitude test to become a fireman. And he was working at the Veterinary College, had no idea how to prepare grass at all. And he prepared the pitches so well that George Graham went down there one day, saw the pitches and offered him a job. And to offer Steve Paddock the job, he had to call Steve Paddock's mum because Steve didn't have a phone at the time. And then so Steve went down to the interview, got the job, and that's it. And then Arsenal's pitches just became second to none in the Premier League because
they did, in fairness,
so dedicated.
They did, and they were. Well, listen, William,
have we reached a stage with these... I don't know what we call them. I was saying to Richard, the old-fashioned word would be grounds person, wouldn't it now?
Yeah.
Have we reached a stage where these guys have a transfer market value? No, I mean that. Let's say Jonathan Calderwood. What would it cost you to get Jonathan Calderwood out of Paris Saint-Germain? That's what I mean.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there are always rumours about what he was being paid, which out of respect him, I won't say. But I mean, it was. I think that might well come. Maybe the article will drive that. I mean,
it's
a very British thing. It's one of the funny things about Calderwood is that they call him the English gardener, L'Anglais Jardinier, and it's so disrespectful because he's not a gardener. He's not a gardener. He's like, I'm not a gardener. I'm a groundsman. But groundsman does not exist in France. There is no job for that. You are a gardener, and as Arnaud, Calderwood's assistant, told me, is that the grass in France is just a place where you go and you go and have a barbecue, and it's a pretty disrespectful thing. Is that, they pay him all this money and they put him on billboards and adverts and stuff like this, and they still call him a gardener. And he's like, I'm not the gardener, and it's everywhere else in the world is really far behind. And there's another story I must tell you, which Richard Hayden, who's the other consultant, who is phenomenally, excellent. He's the guy that worked on the FIFA World Cup in 2010. Basically, Sepp Blatter asked him personally to go out to the World Cup in 2010. He was working at Rustenburg in England for the England training base. And at the time, he didn't really know who Sepp Blatter was at the time. He was mowing the lawn one day, and Sepp Blatter came to visit the England training base. And this was the time when England's training base was, when the World Cup in South Africa, everyone was talking about how bad the pitches were. I'm sure you'll both remember.
Yeah.
And he went over, and Sepp Blatter came over, and he didn't know who Sepp Blatter was at the time. And Sepp Blatter asked him directly, like, what do you think of the pitches? And typically Irish and bold, he just said, oh, they're awful. And the FA, they'll hate me for saying this, apparently were about to fire him because he was rude to Sepp Blatter. And he was at the airport the next day, and Sepp Blatter, assistant, rang him and said, can you be the consultant on the FIFA pitches? And then, of course, this guy spent the whole time of the South Africa World Cup on a private jet with FIFA executives flying across the country preparing the pitches. And at the final, this incident, I think you think there's a YouTube video, I believe, of one of the FIFA executives coming up to him and hugging him, saying, thank you very much for saving the World Cup. And they called him the pitch doctor and everything. That's how it changed.
It is amazing.
Yeah, but he has no idea. He has no idea who the FIFA executives was. He said he was on a plane with Sepp Blatter, and he had no idea who this guy was. And I love the idea of these two worlds meeting,
I wonder who's in charge of Qatar's pitches for next year, for next World Cup.
Go on.
That is, I don't know how that works. FIFA does the same thing. FIFA, since that World Cup, have done the same thing. They've always hired a team of consultants. Similar to what UEFA does, that they have a consultant who works for the groundsman, who essentially oversees their job. It's like an independent. It's just a way of checking that
Whoever it is at this stage, we're not going to find out. That's the William. Yeah. Thank you so much. Thank you to the world's greatest newspaper. Just one last thing before you go. When you go forward, sure. If you speak to anybody else, would you please not describe the 70s and 80s as the olden days?
Yeah, thanks.
Andy and I remember them very well.
I do. The golden days, I think, what you meant to say.
We would prefer that.
Unfortunately, I don't remember those.
No, you don't.
We know you don't need to rub it in. Thank you very much, William. Brilliant
Cheers,
work.
Have a nice
Brilliant
day.
Piece. Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Brilliant. I mean, the whole thing, Andy, is mind-boggling, isn't it?
It's ridiculous.
It really is. But we all do now. We look at that pitch, whichever it is that is being played upon at that, and we all go, wow, beautiful. And they are. And they don't mark.
They don't mark.
Largely. That's why I've also... The goal scorers that slide to the flag on their knees, leaving a trail behind. The grounds, the technicians, whatever we want to call them, they must be, no, don't do that.
I mean, I think that they look so good and they're so perfect. They almost look artificial.
Yes. Well,
I know that. But I wonder if again we're arriving closer and closer to the stage. I hope not.
No, because that William in his article elsewhere does also cover that you go back to an era when QPR had a plastic pitch, literally.
It.
I mean, tarmac and a carpet.
That was ridiculous.
Luton did it. Others have. Sutton United have dug one up in order that they can play in the Football League next year. No, I think we've moved away from that.
What about 4G? I thought 4G was the new pitch.
Well, I think they're just so good, Andy, now, that you don't need to go down that road. It's beautiful, but it's great to hear that the Brits are at the forefront of this technology.
Jonathan Calderwood, ex-Aston Villa man.
And, I mean, it was extraordinary. When we went to the training ground,
and
you recognised him immediately, obviously, you.
Yeah.
And the next minute, we're talking to a groundsman in Paris about grass.
Yeah. It's ridiculous.
Well, fair play to him. Good luck to him.
I did say to him, how come the training ground at Bodymore Heath was so rubbish then, Jonathan, when I was...
If you're listening, Jonathan.
Sorry, we're only joking.
Well done. Congratulations. Yeah. Listen to all of you guys in that business. It's terrific work that you're doing, and we're all of us. Players.
They made them so perfect
more
now.
Than us.
In my day, so chance would come across the penalty area and you'd smash it over the bar from 6 yards or something. Go, what happened there? How did you miss that? It bubbled. Yeah. Bubbled up just as I hit it.
Doesn't
anymore.
But it's also true that Cluffy used to put water on that pitch because Derby could deal with it.
Yeah.
So if he was playing one of the big boys, Tony would grow the grass. We
so
know that.
Slow it down.
So it just so it became a bog.
Yeah.
And you couldn't deal with it.
Brilliant.
Great. Anyway,
I missed the final because of that Derby pitch.
You did, twisted an ankle.
Twisted a bloody ankle. Bloody final, I should say.
In 90 seconds, what can we look forward to, do you think, beyond this point at the Euros? Forget the specifics.
Yeah,
in general terms.
In general terms, I think we can look forward to continued excitement. I'm hoping that the attitude the teams seem to have come in with, the vast majority of them, to not spend too much time in their own half, passing across the back, but go forward and actually try and win football matches. I hope that continues throughout the knockout stages. The big boys all look like they're going to get through. So we're going to have 16 teams there eventually where you're going to find the big boys that are all there. I can't think of any surprises that we're going to see. Well, we're not going to lose Portugal, Germany or France. They're all going to get through either first, second or third, one would imagine. But one of the big ones there, I'm thinking of Germany, should they not beat Portugal or get something against Portugal, they might find themselves struggling to get through as a best third place team. So we might lose a big one, but not many. But excitement, give us as much excitement as we've had. It's been good. Goalmouth action, which has been good. I think fans, Richard, although there are a group that love to see a keep ball session, fans are enjoying this because we are seeing attempts at goal, saves being made, chances being created. And I think as long as that continues, I think we'll have a fabulous knockout stages.
Mm. I mean, I on air at BN, I keep referring back to the last World Cup. Memory may have not be correct, but I seem to recall a really drab 10 days. And we left work every day going, oh, come on, when are we going to see a football match? Totally opposite this time. I've really enjoyed it. I think it's been brilliant.
I think because now, I mean, now you'd probably look at it, a lot of the groups, if it was eight groups, let's say a four, and the top two were getting through. Third and fourth place teams would pretty much be decided by now. They're not.
No.
So four. Four out of the six third place teams are going to get through. Mm. So these games, right up to the very last kick of the last group stages, mean something. And somebody is going to go out in the last 5 minutes of their last game, and someone's going to go through in the last 5 minutes of their last game in the group stages.
But thank you to our friends at Acast for welcoming us in the manner that they have.
Yes, we'll
try
to do our best.
For listening. We will continue to do our best, Andy, not try.
Oh,
thank you also for listening. Tell your mates now you've found us. If you have just found us, there are plenty more like this in the series. Go back and listen. You'll find some terrific tales. You can get in touch with us at Insta and Twitter, Keys and Grey Pod, Keys A-N-D Pod. And we very much look forward to spending time with you.
So at least all your favourites, by the way, before we go.
I have enjoyed watching them as much as and more than anybody. The change in attitude of the Italian
There's an example.
Team.
Attitude change.
By the way, if you want a team to win 1-0, I'd still back them.
Oh, I would.
But it's lovely to see them playing football in the opponent's defensive half. Get up there and play and create things. And I've really warmed to them this time. I wouldn't be able to say that at previous tournaments, but I love the way they've been
There's
playing.
There's one for Everton, I wonder.
I said that, Mancini. Well, I mean, loves the North West, loves the Premier
Knows
League.
The Premier League.
Oh, come on.
Won the title with Man
If you've really got money, Mashiri, and you really got ambition that you want to put Everton in amongst the big boys again, there's your man, not Rafa Benitez.
Well, we started Rafa, we finished Rafa. Let's hope Rafa's not gone.
See you next week.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.